This episode of Retro Rewind is brought to you by Nintendo Dad Patreon supporters. For as little as a dollar a month, our Patreon supporters have been able to help us support and create this amazing episode. So we hope you enjoy. If interested, go to patreon.com/NintendoDad for your support as well. On this episode, we discuss our experience playing The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, the very first handheld game. That's all I have. Cue the music, Zach.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Retro Rewind, the very first. It's not another episode.
Yeah,
it's the
no,
very first one.
No.
Yeah, my name is Zach Erickson, and it is January 6th, 2016. Joining me, as always is the case, is Justin Masson. What's going on, Justin?
Yeah, I am excited. My introduction was not as jovial as usual, a little mistracked. Man, I'm excited to talk about this game, like this game specifically. This was such a cool game to play.
As agreed, I totally agree. We're gonna get into it, man. But it's got some style. It's got some pizzazz. Yeah,
right. Different.
On. Yeah. Speaking of cool, joining us as well is Jesse Waldack from VGTribune.com. What's going on, Jesse?
It's easy to be as always when this is the first.
It is. Yeah. It's true. You know what? Low expectations. I don't know. I feel like we should know how to do this by now, but. I don't know. It's different this time. It's like a whole...
Yeah, this is episode number one, yet we've done 86 other shows.
Yeah, and I feel like... I feel
66 other
60,
shows.
Yeah, and
I can add.
It's interesting because this is like actually the first time it's like, oh, we're going to dedicate an entire hour to one game. Yeah, it's crazy. So it's a little bit of a different animal, but I have... one thing that I'm going to say right off the bat is that one of the things that I want to do with this... Retro Rewind, because retro games, and I said this a little bit before the show, but retro games are so, they're like great fodder for remixes, and so I'm going to have a little bit more, I'm going to bring a little bit more music to it, and I want to have a little bit maybe more other things to pull in. It'll still just be like before in the end, but at the end of the show, I have some really cool stuff to tell people about as well. So, yeah. So this actually, by the way, if people are wanting to know, DJ Cutman, this is the Tal Tal Heights remix called Mountain Range. So that's who this is by, and it's wicked. Here, should I turn this up just for another second?
Do it a little bit, yeah.
Oh, it's gonna. It seems like it's back to the loop.
I hope we've got like a couple of our listeners like rolling down their windows, like blaring and just fist pumping to that. I think that's got me going. You got a little bark sound in the background. Is that the chain chomp barking?
It totally is. We'll get
totally
to that.
Is. I love all that right. Chain chomp.
All two of them.
Yeah, right on. I'm gonna fade this out, and I actually have as well. I have pulled up a soundboard of all the music or all the different sound effects here, so I don't know if any of these are actually going to be any good. It's going to be like
see,
a random.
Let's see if we can play a game. Can Jesse name three of these sounds?
All right,
the game?
Here we go. So this is going to lead into our first section. Here we go.
Oh, I remember it. What was that from?
I'll give you a hint. It's from Link's Awakening.
Okay. Yeah.
It is called the sound effect on this website. It says, pick up a new siren instrument.
I figured time. I had something to do with the instruments, but I'm like, is that actually one of the instruments or is that something else? But it was close.
It's very grandiose.
I have all of the different ones as well. I have sound clips of each one. You have to tell me which one as I do them later in the show.
I don't even remember the names of them.
Right on. So, yeah, so let's, Justin, you've got a bunch of little notes here as far as maybe what would be good to do is start out with a little bit of history.
Sure.
Should
yeah.
we have a history? So can you give us a history lesson?
Yeah, I did. You know, I can.
Someone should make a YouTube video about this.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that as well. I'm going to give you a bit of the audio clips of it, obviously. But if you guys want a really good kind of history of The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, do check it out. Well, if you're a Patreon supporter, you've already got this early access video. But we're going to be opening the video up to our public YouTube channel as well. Our good friend of the show, Cass Lush, did this amazing 9-minute video giving us a history of it. It's spoiler ridden, of course, but it's pretty cool.
We should also say spoilers as well for this, right? Like,
yeah, this game is like over 20 years old. Spoilers got to be lifted at some point, I would think. Right?
I think most people have either played it or have heard the basic sort of premise.
I will tell you though, doing the voiceover inside story here, doing the voiceover work for that video, I had never finished the game, never knew it, so I was like literally reading the script. I was like, oh. That just ruined it for me. I didn't know. I was like, well, I don't know. Oh man.
Oh man, what?
Come on. I think I was even doing the voiceover cold, so I hadn't even read it beforehand, and I got to it and it was like, oh.
That's okay. Awesome.
But I do have some points here. So this game was originally released on the Game Boy in 1993, and interestingly enough, it was originally scheduled to be known as The Legend of Zelda Dream Island in Japan. I think it was also released still as that way, which kind of gives a bit of
it's a little spoiler.
It's a little spoilerish,
it's like,
for sure.
It's like if they had named like Empire Strikes Back, like Star Wars, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, kind of like, and we're done here. interestingly enough, this was the first
roll credits.
Yeah. This was the first Legend of Zelda on a Nintendo handheld, again, the Game Boy. It was, interestingly enough, actually the fourth in the Legend of Zelda series. So, again, this was 1993. And I had to think about what the three were prior to this. So it was the two on the NES and then the Super Nintendo Entertainment System's A Link to the Past, which was the third one, and then this was the fourth. Now, that actually kind of ties into where this came into the chain of things, because originally this was actually supposed to be a port of A Link to the Past from the Super Nintendo, but in the end it didn't end up doing that. Some other interesting things that I found out about this game, or I shouldn't say found out about the game, but it strikes some very different parts. It takes a different turn, obviously, than some of the other Zelda games that you might have played. First kind of points is that it actually doesn't take place in Hyrule at all and does not feature Princess Zelda, Ganon, or the Triforce. So these would be kind of becoming staple things. None of those are actually referenced here.
Isn't Ganon, and again, I didn't get all
Ganon,
the way to the end.
There is a reference to Ganon.
He's like
it's not him is in a physical form.
It's like,
yeah,
evil,
I guess
there's
a reference,
Ganon,
but he doesn't appear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, interestingly enough,
that'll be like a big ultimate spoiler talking about the ending. But
yeah,
we'll get to that later.
Sure. Then, it was re-released in 1998 on the Game Boy Color as Link's Awakening DX. Do you guys know what the DX stands for?
Deluxe.
I actually didn't know. I was hoping you did.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's
Deluxe.
My guess, because that was a Super Mario Brothers Deluxe. That's what it was called.
Yeah. Okay.
Which was a re-release of the original Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah.
With extra stuff involved.
Yeah, there are a couple of things in relation to the story that
I think that's actually on Virtual Console.
Mm, oh, you know what, though? Hang on. It says, I just Googled, does DX stand for Deluxe? And then there's like a thread, and it's literally, it says, DX is short for Director's Cut, or it could mean Deluxe.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know.
Which, I mean, I guess, I don't know.
It's probably
a couple other interesting things about the game. If you are a Hyrule historian or Legend of Zelda, how does all these things fit together? We did some research, went into this large Legend of Zelda book, took a look into it here, guys. And the events of Link's Awakening actually occur after Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons. Now, this is actually the third story in the Hero is Defeated timeline, which is a break off from the Oracle of Time series. And this actually follows follows the decline of Hyrule and the last hero per the Zelda universe again. So the Zelda universe is kind of a little bit weird, but
piece
together where it goes together. But this is the idea of it being is this is the defeated Hero's Defeated timeline. So.
This is, you know, I mean, I love the fact that there's a timeline, but I also hate the fact that there's a timeline.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. I was looking at it before the show, and I was like, my eyes started going cross-eyed. I was like, what's going on?
It's cool that Ocarina of Time is like the center point, right? And then depending on what happened. So in other words, the timeline of Link's Awakening is Ocarina of Time has happened, but he loses, like he fails, right?
Yep. And yeah, that's where the bridge begins to depart. Yeah.
Right. And then Link to the Past happens, which is the resurrection of Ganon. And then Ocarina of Ages and Ocarina of Seasons happens. And then Link's Awakening. And then
those
after,
are the oracles of.
And then after that is Legend of Zelda, the original.
Yeah, you can hear that. Maybe hear that sound in the microphone. I'm flipping to find out where the timeline here is.
I just found it on. On like ZeldaWiki.org or something. But yeah,
I'm sure we have an article at VGTribune.com.
I'm sure we do, but you know, whatever.
It's pretty cool though. I like the.
Yeah. Roger went nuts with that when that came out.
It's very cool. Like, it's cool, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure I've seen stuff before where like Miyamoto's impression of the timeline is just like ugh. Or like Aonuma. Like, it seems like the actual people who currently are responsible for the Zelda franchise are just like, why is everybody so excited about this? And I kind of feel the same way. Like, it's just like a sort of multiple. It's like James Bond. Mm-hmm. Almost to me, you know, like the original James Bond was like, who cares? It's a cool James Bond movie. That's all you need to know.
And it's funny, kind of going into this book. The page right before the timeline is a chronology of Hyrule Lands of the Gods, and it says in right in the middle, before you devolve any further into this chapter, read this: Weaving History. This chronology merely collects information that is believed to be true at this time, and there are many obscure and unanswered secrets that still lie within the tale. Mm-hmm. So, as the stories and storytellers of Hyrule change, so too does its history. So I thought that was Hyrule's history is a continuously woven tapestry of events. Changes that seem inconsequential, disregarded, even with a shrug, could evolve at some point to hatch new legends and perhaps change the tapestry of the history itself.
I think part of that is
basically like, hey, FYI, things change.
And not only that, but like, I'm pretty sure that a link between worlds is actually a direct sequel to A Link to the Past or something like that. And so, like that's somewhere in this timeline now.
Yeah,
we talked about
it a few months ago where that fits in, but I don't remember. And I wonder if Nintendo would have even released a timeline at all if they didn't integrate that so well into Skyward Sword as being the first game.
Right. Yeah. That's
well, I mean, this released about the same time as Skyward Sword, right?
So yeah, that was released in Japan. It was released like almost day and date.
Yeah, so I think that helped to do it up. Mm-hmm. So a couple of the things, just we've talked about where it is in the timeline, and if you're cross-eyed already and you're still with us, thanks for being here. A couple of interesting parts about the game that it kind of does it that traditionally Zelda games haven't done is it actually breaks the fourth wall. Jesse talked a lot about this about 3 months ago when he was doing a playthrough for it. And so, for example, characters actually give direction to the player in relation to game design. So, for example, you meet a young shopkeeper, a young boy, and they're saying, you know, just do this to save. I don't even really know what save is. So it's breaking
don't,
the fourth
wall. Don't ask me about that. I'm just a kid.
Yeah. Breaking the fourth wall and giving instruction to the player through the use of a character and the character's reflection that he doesn't really know what they're talking about was a very interesting part. And then some other interesting things, several Nintendo characters actually make appearances in the game. This, I don't know about you guys, but this is my first playthrough, but that became very predominant very quickly. Yeah. And the first time I was like, oh, wait, is that a Chain Chomp? Say what?
It was amazing.
It kind of shocked me. So Chain Chomps, Goombas, Shy Guys, Mario makes an appearance in a
Yoshi's
way.
Yoshi. Like,
yeah. There's a later on in the game, in the trading sequence, you meet this, you find this human writer who has a fan in the animal area who's a hippo and wants you to give a letter from the hippo back to the writer, like a thank you letter. And with it was attached a photo. Of course, it isn't a photo of her. It's a photo of Peach.
Nice.
So there's another reference.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I love those. I kind of wish, well, it's like that sort of thing. It's one of the first times where they had that sort of cross game sort of stuff going on. I think part of why they did that was because it was a handheld game. I think you were in the video, Justin, you said like this was almost like a sort of after hours project that they were working on, right? They were just kind of messing around.
It 100% was. It was kind of just as the wording that we used in the video was like an after school project. Right. Yeah. And so what they saw is they started to see some of the developers and designers from some of these other games come over and kind of do work on this after school project together. So all of a sudden, well, if it's an after school project, we can kind of do whatever we would normally not do.
And a lot of these people were in the same R&D, I forget which one, maybe R&D 4, you know, the same team that does the Mario games.
Yeah, exactly. So the other interesting thing that I thought was really cool about it was actually its incorporation of the side-scrolling mechanics as found in Zelda 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I thought that was very cool. That those kind of moments you go down into the underground, all of a sudden it flips to that side-scrolling Zelda 2 kind of profile, which is very, you know, we haven't really seen that repeated since this game in any kind of context that same way, right? Everything's kind of that quarter top-down view.
Yeah,
for most everything, this and Zelda 2 are the only times really that side-scrolling, as I recall. But Jesse, am I wrong on that?
I believe that's right, and because of that, because you the necessity to need to jump in this type of view, that they created the item that lets you jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think they did. Having played this, basically the sequel to this, Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages, I'm pretty sure that they have those sequences
Rock's,
there.
Rock's too. Feather is in there too.
Yeah,
The Link's Awakening was the first time that Rock's Feather was used.
Right, but yeah, and it's used again, and they have the side scrolling areas in that as well. But it's again, that's more of a. In fact, I'm trying to remember. Do they have the cape in this? I don't think they have the cape in this one. They actually expanded it further. So, in this game, you can just jump with the feather. In Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages, they actually have Rock's cape. So you can kind of jump, and then the cape opens up, and you glide for a
kind of like
bit.
A hover.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like a glide sort of thing, almost like the leaf or something like that, maybe in Wind Waker, that sort of deal, without the blowing mechanic. So, it's so cool the different things that they have here. The one thing that I'm thinking about already that I kind of went back and played, I was like, oh yeah, the whole. Because there was so few buttons, and I think for the most part they did a really great job of transferring the Zelda gameplay into Game Boy, the really limited technology of a Game Boy, that 8-bit style or whatever, or hardware. The fact that there were significantly less buttons... It was a real big...
That made inventory management a challenge.
Yeah, literally every single time you had to move an item, it was like, oh.
Especially when you came across a three-space gap when you had to equip the feather and the boots.
Yeah, and it's like, well, and now I don't have a sword, and now I've got to get a different, all that sort of stuff. It was a hassle at some point.
But, yeah, I'd agree. I found that was, for me, I found that was probably the areas that I was finding the most frustration in the game.
Yeah.
Was especially going through some of the castles, or sorry, some of the dungeons, right? Like, okay, I need to be able to lift this rock up out of the way, but I also need to be able to jump this hole, right? So, and I always felt like I needed to have my sword in my hand, right? Yeah. So I very rarely took away my sword. So it was always like replacing the B button, replace the B button. It kind of cycled it through.
Same with the shield too, right? Like, the shield... The fact that you can't have it on you all the time, you had to intentionally get your shield out, was like, it was a little bit much too. But
so I mean, I felt at times that actually just jarred me from it, right? Like, and it also kind of changed my perception of playing a little bit. Now, so this was my first time playing a old school like DS Game Boy Color game on my 3DS. Mm-hmm. So. You know, I was expecting like, okay, well, I have all these buttons up here. I've got my shoulder buttons. I've got my X, Y. Come on now.
Nope.
But no, you've got to use that old, the BA, which, you know, definitely brings you back to that nostalgia of playing.
The Y button, at least in mine, when I played it, the Y button did mimic the select button.
Mm.
But other than that, nah, nothing else worked.
Yeah, but I did find that more frustrating at times than anything else.
Yeah, because I pushed it by accident.
Yeah, but like, okay, so stop, I'm going to pause here, I'm going to select what I need to do now for inventory management, and so that was
frustrating. This isn't even the inventory screen, this is like, here's the map, like, I don't want the map, go away.
Yeah, I jumped around on that one a couple times too, and I was like, I found it clunky at times for definitely the controls in that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was interesting though, because it was, I don't know, like, I still respect what they're doing for the time, right? Like, that's... Well,
Absolutely. So what they're doing at the time, and sorry, Zach, I'll let you continue. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's all I was going to say, is that for the time, it was a really huge achievement. I actually hadn't played this game until much later, and I actually played Oracle of Seasons when it first came out, but I hadn't played Link's Awakening until quite recently when it was on the eShop. But I do remember playing a similar game on 3DS that was Final Fantasy Adventure, which I've talked about before. That's the closest thing that I've played to a game like this.
I need to replay that. It's been a long time.
Yeah, and it was similar, but I almost feel like it was simplified more, and therefore it was a little bit easier to keep sort of... It was just the inventory management, I feel like, was almost better there, because you only had... You had one button that was weapon, one button that was spell, and you assigned a weapon to one button and a spell to the other button. And you still kind of had that problem where you would have like, okay, I'm going to use my fire spell, now I'm going to use my healing spell and stuff like that. But it was a little bit more simplified. And I played the crap out of that game, and I actually have fonder memories of that game than this game, but only because that's what I played when I was younger. I kind of recognize that this game does do quite a bit more with like dungeon design and stuff like that. Like dungeon design in Final Fantasy Adventure was rough. You know, it was like a lot of going through mazes and not actually solving puzzles, just going through and finding your way through some sort of a dungeon maze thing. So,
right. Yeah, it was. I guess the thing that I found probably the most challenging from it, and I've kind of told you guys that I didn't really play a lot of Zelda growing up. It wasn't kind of my cup of tea. It was always Mario games. So like I've been kind of like consuming a lot of Zelda in the last, you know, probably 5 years and really enjoying it, or 5 to 10 years. And having played like Triforce Heroes and having played A Link Between Worlds and A Link to the Past, and you're kind of used to these things, right, for the way you play, and then to kind of come almost kind of like go back to the blueprint, go back to the frame where things started, right? You expect things to be there, mm-hmm. right? So I expect for inventory management to be different, or I expect to be labeled like, oh, here's my shield, just pull it out, right? Or to use those buttons, and now it's not there. But also at the same time, to look at where it came from, right? You can see how a Link's Awakening became the archetype for how a lot of these other games that you're playing now on your handheld began,
mm-hmm.
right? Things feel familiar, but they feel, you know, they feel familiar because I'm playing the game that was released 2 years ago about it. But the reason that feels familiar is because 20 years ago, this game was created that made these things feel the way they feel now. It's kind of like Inception-ish, kind of like,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So it's this kind of weird, weird observation for sure. I enjoyed it though. I really enjoyed it.
I think that's going to be something that we see a lot as we continue to do this Retro Rewind stuff, where it's like, man, it's hard to, it's an interesting thing to go back to a game and recognize, man, this was really revolutionary at the time, but there have also been really great improvements since then,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? That they've, people have continued to perfect this even more, and yeah, I think that's a really good point.
But there's something that, I mean, in just relation to like game design, that is so quintessentially good, right? So like, you know, you're walking around, you find a big rock, or a vase, right? And you're like, hey, I know that in you know, Link Between Worlds, I can pick this vase up and throw it and smash it,
yeah,
right? And they're like, whoa, 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 this vase too heavy for you now with your own bare hands, but you should find something, you know, maybe something else later and it can help you. And you discover this vase, you know, or these rocks within the first couple of minutes of your game, and you're like, okay, I know that somewhere in this game I am going to find said bracelet or said gloves or whatever it is that's going to help me come back and solve this problem later, but I just need to be able to move on right now and find a different way. So there's just clever level design throughout. I mean, all these games like that are just clever level design that brings you back knowing, like, now that you have this MacGuffin, this thing, you can now do these next five things. It's not just like, oh, and by the way, now we've opened a new world, or oh, by the way, now you can finally go defeat this boss, right? It actually provides more depth to the lands you've already explored.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the things that kind of bugged me with the game is even I know that I can't do anything with this boulder, but I accidentally bumped it, so it's got to give me that 3 pages of text again.
Yeah.
Just let me go. Move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, move on. There were times I was like transitioning between like one stage to another, like one room to another, and like I'd kind of come in and I'd be turning to like get away from an enemy, but like run into the vase, and I'm like trying to get my sword to get ready to fight, and they're like, "You can't lift this." I'm like, "I know I can't lift, but I hit the button in error." Just like I know this.
And then later on in the game, you'll see the crystals that you need a different item for, and then the ice blocks that you need a different item for. I'm like, I know how this stuff works. Stop talking to me about it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it's super, super interesting. I don't know. The thing is, though, is like with things like that, I don't know. They never really bothered me too much. It was just like, okay. But I think part of what was kind of difficult about a lot of early games, I think, honestly, and maybe this is just me being like some casual wimp, I don't know, but a lot of times it was really sort of like, all right, I beat this dungeon. Oh, now what? And like, you know what I mean? It's almost like a sort of like Metroid feel to you beat the level, and then the owl would come and say, "Oh yeah, now go to this place." And I'm like, I don't know where that is at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I have no idea what you're talking about, owl. And then he'd like, and he'd fly away.
I feel like this was like the era where, you know, you'd get this, you'd finish a level and they'd be like, "Hey, here's this, this, and this." And then you'd like pause the game. You'd go over to your box. You'd open up the box. You'd open up the manual. You'd flip through like 5 pages and talk and figure out what the hell the owl's talking about. Or maybe an overarching map or location. And you're like, okay, now I need to go there.
Or you like go to I did this a few times, like go to the phone booth or whatever. And where it's like, oh, yeah, go there whenever you're lost. And you go there and I'm like, that was not helpful either.
Right? Yeah.
By the way, I found another. I found another sound.
Let's hear it.
There you go.
That's the owl. No, it's not the owl.
That's the owl. Yeah.
It's the owl. Yeah.
And well, then I mean, he'll I like mean, this. Oh, these are way shorter than they want them to be.
Haha.
The other thing. I mean, even to kind of go to that point, I was stuck in an area, and the owl had told me like you have to do this and this. You have to defeat in this order. You know, basically, it was like the Pollock voice and then the shroud. And I was like, I have no idea what you just said to me. And yeah. I go in this level and I'm like, there is a bunny stuck behind a block and there is a guy.
The bunny is a Paul's voice.
Yeah, I was like, and what looks to be some creepy punk.
That's the Stealthos.
Yeah, and I was like, and there appears to be a bat. And of course, after like being stuck and not figuring out where the hell I had to do, I eventually went to a GameFAQs, right? I'm like, okay, now I'm getting frustrated. And they're like, oh, you have to kill in specific order. And they weren't even calling it a bat. It was like called a Kisai or something. I'm like, what the hell is a Kisai? Yeah, it's called a bat.
It was yeah, they're called Kis.
Yeah, Kis. I'm like, just called a bat. It's a bat and the bunny. These are universal terms, bat and bunny.
but the manual, the actual manual shows the names of all the monsters in the Zelda lore.
Can you get the manual on the DS or on the?
I don't think you can.
Then what the hell?
Original manual.
Yeah. Are you supposed to like? That's the thing that a lot of older games would actually. They would just assume that you know what they were talking about.
That's exactly. I even have this. I will go through and find it where you don't call it a bat.
And for those not watching, this is Hyrule Historia.
Yeah.
Like, son of a.
I'm looking at this. Like, oh, that's
actually,
so funny.
You know what? Honestly,
Keith.
for those of you that are missing it, I actually literally just opened up the book, flipped to the first page, and sure enough, this thing that's called a Keith and that looks like a bat is sitting right there looking at me.
By the way, one of the things that drove me crazy just about more than anything else was, and this is an ongoing issue that I have with Zelda games in general. But when you would get sucked up by a like, which is like the jellyfish thing, and it would eat your shield. And
I've always thought those looked like a stack of pancakes.
Yeah. I always thought it looked like a jellyfish, but it's like, that always drove me crazy. It was like, why?
Which is one of the advantages of not always wearing your shield.
It's like, why is that a fun game mechanic to lose your shield and have to go somewhere to buy your shield again?
I've fallen into the lilacs like 4 or 5 times, but I never lost a shield because I was never had it equipped at that time.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, even in like older, like later games, like in Ocarina of Time, when you have like the wood shield,
it sucked.
And it burns
at least
up.
There, if you still killed it fast enough, the wood shield would be a drop.
Or you could like roll it or something, right?
But if you did that.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
In the original Legend of Zelda, if you spent the money to buy the magic shield, it's a bigger shield,
yeah.
The Lycanroc would eat it, and then now you're down to the dinky shield, which doesn't reflect magic anymore.
Yeah.
And then you have to go out and buy it again.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of these weird names, Justin. Like, some of them are like just super simple, and some of them aren't. Like, there's like Beamos, which is like that eyeball beam thing. Mm-hmm. There's like the Buzz Blob, which is super annoying too, by the way. The little green dude who, if you hit him, he electrocutes you.
Like, is there seriously nowhere when you download this game that has a digital electronic manual for you to look
at? I think they have manuals, but I don't know if it's a reproduction of. I wish I would have had my. Maybe I do.
I got my DS. I'm gonna hold on.
Yeah, my 3DS is actually en route to Washington to get a repair.
The show is now all just Jesse.
So I can't look. Yeah. I can't look.
I'm looking right now too. But like, and then there's like the little sea urchin thing. It's called a sea urchin.
Yeah. Like, if it's a sea urchin, like,
and there's like the, and then Octoroks, which I think a lot of people know, you know. I love that, and I think that is a really good. Oh, by the way, the Boo Buddy is one mm-hmm. that's in here. That's one thing that I really that you've got to give to this game too is the difference. The sprite work in general is phenomenal.
Yeah,
you know, as far as like getting a sprite that small to have them all be so distinctive and so expressive, you know, is just great work.
Because what are those? Like, no more than 16 by 16 pixels.
Something like that, yeah.
Because the system, GBC doesn't have a big resolution to start with.
Mm-hmm. Justin, to get to the manual, you launch the game, and then you hit the home button, and it'll be along the bottom there.
Okay, hold on a second.
But looking at it, I'm not seeing anything.
I have to play the game. Oh, I see.
It's not a reproduction of the original manual. It's more of like, how do you play the game? I don't know. Maybe it is. But if that's the case, then... Content. The enemies were never in the original manual if this is a reproduction of the original.
Language. I want English, not French. Who changed it to English?
All right. So I just did a Google search for Link's Awakening DX manual, and I find a PDF from ZeldaCapital.com that is the manual.
Like the original manual?
Yeah, it is this photo. You know, they just photocopy every page and then
cast of characters.
Build a PDF with it.
Yeah.
Owl, Grandpa.
By the way, did you notice, right. did any of you guys here ever play SimCity for Super Nintendo?
Yes.
Did you recognize the green-haired dude from, like, who's basically from that game?
No.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, the green-haired dude. Mr. Wright, I think he's called?
Yeah.
He's got like the green hair.
Is he the same Mr. Wright as the one from writing the letters?
I think so. Yeah. So like I don't know if he's from. Yeah. I don't know if he's actually from.
They do
from
look
Sim
similar.
City, but it's like the same character design for sure. Oh yeah, you know Mr. Wright in Sim City is they spell it differently. They spell it W R I G H T, but he's Mr. Wright in like writing as in like writing in Link's Awakening.
So I am going through this like electronic manual right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say a couple things. I do appreciate, by the way, how nice this is and easy to read, because it is relatively easy and nice to read.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a good job of like, hey, by the way, here's how you start the game. And by the way, here's the map and here's your actions and swimming and all this kind of stuff and an introduction. All good things. But at no point am I told a cast of
it's
villains.
Not in this. It's not in this manual.
It's not in the original either. No. So I guess...
But they actually do have an.
It's presuming you've played the previous three games.
Apparently, but they do have the prologue completely verbatimed out.
Yeah.
After defeating the evil tyrant Ganon, Link took advantage of the peace that he brought to the kingdom of Hyrule and traveled abroad seeking enlightenment, wisdom, and new skills.
Which is funny because I think in the actual timeline this happens first.
Yeah. So here we go. Yeah, there goes that whole timeline thing, right? It's so ad hoc, like, yeah, let's put a timeline in, guys. And it's totally not.
And, you know, in the explanation of why at the start of The Legend of Zelda you have no items is because you just got off this shipwreck ship.
I see. Okay, here we go. This is, tell me, we're going to have another instrument. You ready? Okay. You got to tell me what the instrument is. You ready? You ready? Wow, that was a lot more like...
Is that the conch horn?
Scratchy. Is the cello. What? That's not a cello.
I was going to say cello.
Awfully high pitch for a cello.
I was going to say, that does not sound like a cello. That is a very high
pitch. I was actually just going to be a smartass. That's all I was going to try and be. But apparently my smartass answer was the right answer.
See, the cello in Wind Waker sounds like a violin because, you know, a peewee's playing it and the cello is 2 feet tall.
Right.
So it is a violin size. So it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But
this one, who knows? Yeah, maybe the translation team should have put violin and put cello. I don't know. Okay, here's another one.
Is that the organ of Evening Calm?
No, that was the conch horn.
That's the conch horn.
Yeah, this is the organ of Evening Calm. Maybe.
See, I would have guessed that was a conch horn too.
Yeah, so see,
they should have just switched them.
They're all starting to sound the same.
Speaking of
thunder, I think the thunder drum had a kind of a unique sound to it.
Cool. What were you going to say, Justin?
I said, speaking of sounds, one of the things that I thought was very interesting about this game, even in the first dungeon, they say to you, like, hey, make sure you have your volume on, because if you enter a room, there's a secret hidden key, it'll make a sound.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember that.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to have... I know in other games you have to...
Room, or do we lose faces?
Oh, hello?
But I found it very interesting, because I felt like I typically don't play with my sound on. Hello?
Yeah. No, I can hear you.
You guys hear me?
Hang on, I'll pause this real quick. And we're back. Okay. Sorry, everybody. Where were we?
I was talking about the sound.
Yeah. Because
we were just playing music.
Yeah.
So what I was saying was, do you guys remember in like the first dungeon, it tells you that it'll play a musical key or clue if there's a key in that room?
Yeah. Do you have to have a compass? That was my question.
You have to have the compass.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that bugged me. Every time you picked up the compass, it reminded you of this fact. Like, I've received 8 freaking compasses already. Yeah. I know how it works.
Yeah.
The thing, typically when I play, I typically don't have my music on.
Really?
Because right? I'm usually at a public place, or I'm laying in bed. My wife's trying to sleep. Like, I don't very often have my speakers actually on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, and I didn't have earbuds. So I was like, uh-oh.
Dude, you know what?
I guess I'm
especially
gonna need that.
Especially on old Game Boy games, headphones, man. Like, headphones are great because some of that old 8-bit, chiptune sort of stuff.
Yeah,
they really use stereo effects to really great effect a lot of times too in the music. That's something that I found at least, anyways. So, I would definitely suggest playing with headphones for a lot of different games as you're playing. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was definitely kind of a lesson for me to take away as we move forward for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. I love some of that Game Boy. The sound of Game Boy music in your headphones is great. I grew up with that, so I have a really good appreciation for it.
So I'm going through this manual, and I'm like, oh, if I forgot about this part in the new features. Did you come across the camera shop?
Mm-hmm. I did, but I don't really remember anything about it.
Yeah, I don't remember any of this happening when I played through it when I first bought the game back in 2011. But in the second playthrough, if you walk to a certain place at a certain right time, this person will come and take a picture of you, and then you're able to, if you had the Game Boy printer attached to your system, you could print pictures from the game. There are 12 pictures that you can collect in the game, and I think I only ended up with 4.
Looking at this.
In the manual, it says, somewhere on the island is a camera store. Inside is a photographer who helps you with taking souvenir photos. Since this game does not support the Game Boy printer, you will not be able to actually print out any photos.
Mm-hmm. But you could post them to Miiverse if you wanted, probably.
Sure you could.
Yeah. This is cool. Yeah, I'm looking at...
Of course, this game was written before Miiverse. I don't know. No, there's no Miiverse support in here because it's.
Well, not Miiverse support, but you can. Yeah, I mean, you can post. You can post screenshots, right?
I was thinking if it was going into the DS mode, you couldn't do that, but this would still be running in 3DS.
Yeah, it's a virtual console game, so it would be. Right. Yeah, you can. You can post the screenshots.
I've been playing DS games too much, way too many.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'm getting confused. Jesse, get your head on straight.
God. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot I didn't have a camera on. I did something funny with my head.
Yeah. Let's see. We're gonna get another one. Here's that thunder drum. Wow. That was
I'm gonna guess it's the thunder drum.
Yeah, it was.
Considering he just said it.
Oh, I know. I'm fully aware of that.
All right, what about this one? Here we go. We got four left.
Surf harp.
Yeah, very nice. Here's one.
Wow. Wind marimba?
Nope. That was a sea lily's bell.
Sea lily bell.
Yeah. All right, there's only two left.
My process of elimination.
Here's a clue. It's an instrument that is only able to play one note.
Coral triangle.
Oh, did I? Oh, here we go. And the last one, which you kind of said already, but. Oh, that was a cool one.
See, I thought the bell was the marimba because the picture of the marimba only has four notes. Ah. And only four notes was played.
Yeah. And clearly the artist did not listen to the sound clip before they drew that picture.
Aren't clearly.
So I've got to say the music in this game in general and just the whole mood of the game as we kind of get into like the story is so eerie, right? Like there's this this sort of off-putting sort of like it's not, I guess maybe eerie is not the right word, but off-putting does feel right. Right? Where it's like and I like it's all that part of that thing that like it's a dream and you know all that sort of stuff. It just everything seems a little bit off. And I love that.
If you recall from the video, you know, the designers were inspired by Twin Peaks and that kind of off spookiness, kind of not quite right feeling that they get from that. So I think you kind of see some of those themes and those things being reminiscent in the game. Mm-hmm.
And even just in like the main overworld as well, right? Like, yes, it's the Zelda music, but it's a little off, right? Mm-hmm. It's just great. Sorry, you were going to say something too, Jesse.
I was?
Oh, maybe not. Yeah, like it just, everything just felt a little bit off, right? I don't know, maybe not. I'm not going to keep doing that. Yeah, no. Anyways, just everything felt a little bit weird. I loved it.
So one thing I just noticed here. So did you play the new dungeon that's color-based? Did you get that far?
No, I didn't, but I have seen, I did watch some video of it, and I'm pretty sure that they had similar like things in Oracle of Seasons where they would use color, like they had like a magnet dungeon where you had like north and south and what like red and blue colors and whatever. So I have played an equivalent version of it and I watched some of it, but sorry, go ahead. What were you going to?
Yeah. So because the DX could be played on a regular Game Boy.
So did that just not show up?
So it just, well, so you'd play the game in black and white, just like the original game, but you wouldn't be able to enter this dungeon. But it's saying that the manual says if you have a Game Boy, Game Boy Pocket, or Super Game Boy, you cannot go here. I thought the Super Game Boy could emulate Game Boy Color.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
So I'm kind of surprised that it added that. Anyway, so the reward for doing the bonus dungeon was to get either the red tunic or the blue tunic,
mm-hmm.
which gives you, you know, they have the items like the power little Triforce piece that doubles your sword strength for a limited time and the acorn that increases your defense for a limited time.
Mm-hmm.
The red gives you permanent that ability and the blue gives you permanent acorn ability.
Cool.
So that's really cool. As soon as they got that, I went red and just was able to go nuts with my sword.
That's awesome. I love even the laser.
Even though I never got the upgraded sword, it was still felt powerful.
I love the laser sword. Like
I never got the laser sword. I didn't get enough seashells.
Were you like shoot the laser beam out of your sword it's super fun.
Yeah, you needed to collect 20 seashells, and I think I only got like 13.
Yeah.
13 or 14.
Yeah, it just like the sound effect for that even was just creepy almost. I don't know if it's on here. Anyway.
But as soon as I got the fire rod, it was pretty much the same type of weapon. So mm-hmm. I equipped the fire rod instead of my sword, and that did just as much damage.
Nice. That's awesome. So, gentlemen, what else do we have going on here, Justin? Where else can we go? We talked about some
favorite moments. I don't know. Is there anything that really stood out for you guys?
I love the moment where you try and walk out of the shop with something and try to steal, and the shopkeeper reveals his true colors, and, mm-hmm. and you're just like, "Oh, what the crap just happened?" Right, and he like kills you. Doesn't he? He like comes out and
he'll kill you.
Yeah, he just is like, oh,
he'll let you leave. You can leave once and steal the item, but if you come back, you're dead.
Yeah, yeah. That is like when that happens, you're just like, oh my gosh, what? like, what is this craziness? I love that. I think that's super weird and creepy. And anytime that there was weird Nintendo stuff in there, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Again, it really adds to that dreamlike state of that game. Just the whole feel of it, I really, really think is cool. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, I think for me, the very first moment that I saw a character that was not from the Zelda universe, so i.e. the Chain Chomp, Yoshi, these very, you know, definite, like even the first time you go underground, that side scrolling, and there's a Goomba and a piranha plant, and I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like that for me just is so standing out, because I'm like, this isn't like, to your point, this feels like I know what should be going on, but obviously I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just has that kind of that weird feeling to it, and it was kind of also like this. You know, I remember I was like looking around like, does anyone else see this? Like, am I crazy? But it was, yeah, that to me, I think was such a memorable moment. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah. What about you, Jesse?
Like, I have two. This is my third time playing through the game. I played through the original black and white version when it was new. And then I bought it again. I bought it in 2011 when the shop opened. This was like this first game. And then I played it through a few weeks ago, and I remembered the fetch quest part being a lot more convoluted and confusing than it actually ended up being. I didn't have any problems with it. I'm not sure if I just didn't talk to everybody, because everyone, they tell you exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have it right away, but you know, come back after the next dungeon and you'll have it.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so that was kind of fun going through again. And I normally don't like fetch quests, but this one, you know, kind of in a weird way made sense within the lore of the game being just weird in the first place. It all kind of fit. Kind of like a Leighton game. It's bonkers, but yet it fits for that universe.
And it's like internally consistent, and it is very right. much a Zelda game. But in a weird way.
Yeah.
It's like the Majora, it's like a handheld version of Majora's Mask. Is like a similar sort of thing, I think, is probably the best comparison that I can that I can draw, really.
And then the other thing I liked is the ending.
You know, yeah.
So big spoilery here, you're told right from the start that this might be just all a dream, and you know, you wake up the windfish and it'll all go away, and you know, but initially people don't look like they care, because they don't actually think you're going to be able to do anything about it. And then by the time you get the sixth instrument, things are starting to notice what you're doing, and it's obvious that they're trying to stop you.
Yeah.
And then the final boss ends up just being a sequence of nightmares of both your nightmares and the Windfisher's nightmares kind of combined, which is where the Ganon comes from.
Right.
And there's a little Agahodnim in there from the Super Nintendo game, Link to the Past.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? I noticed actually that this game actually really kind of broadcasts that revelation in the opening sequence, in the sound effects that I noticed. Like, I'll actually play it so that you can hear it, but it has the very classic sort of like sound effect that you would hear even on like an old like soap opera with the harp of like going into a dream sequence, like the brruh, 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 or whatever, right? Okay, listen to this and listen for it. This is the opening title sequence. Right, so here's like the storm on the boat, lightning. Now we see Link on the boat, and then it kind of fades. Right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now he's on the beach. But it's that moment here where it's like,
and those large screen pixel arts are pretty impressive for a Game Boy.
Yeah. That I think they add that. Did they add that in the DX version, or
no,
was that in
the black and white pixel art existed in the Game Boy version too?
Yeah, it's so good. I found that really interesting that I noticed that in. Oh, there it is, broadcast right in the opening sequence there, the little that it is going to be a dream. Very cool. If you notice it, right? Very cool. So, any other thoughts, guys, as we talk about, to kind of wrap up Link's Awakening? It's been great to play it again. It's been a really fun visit, and I'm going to continue to play through it, and I am going to finish it up for sure. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun to go back to it. It's a really good, and as a first entry into the handheld Zelda thing, like, man, what an impressive feat. You know what I mean?
I think the only thing that like I very distinctly kind of recognized during it is like, good Lord, like if you didn't have the internet back in 1993, this was tough.
Yeah.
Like I was really happy at times I was able to just very quickly be like, you know, I'm just going to check on the, the internet to figure out where things actually are going on. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually back in 1993, while most people didn't have internet in their homes yet, I did have internet access through the university that I went to because I had graduated in high school in 92.
Oh, geez, man. I was 7 years old.
And so while it is still a thing, but it isn't as used anymore, there's a thing called Usenet News where it's kind of like a message forum where, you know, there's rooms, and in each room you can put posts, and so there was a lot of the games that were popular at the time would have a room, and there, so there'd be people that's where people met to talk about, you know, ask questions, answer questions. People would put together what now you would see in Game Facts. They'd build these text based documents and put them up and post them. So all that stuff was available, just not as widespread.
Yeah, it's a really interesting. I remember like the old days of like the text based FAQ as well, or like the walkthrough, but it was all like with little ASCII art in there and stuff like that. That's
But again, Game Facts, still people who make those Game Facts stuff still do that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's sweet. So I think that's just about all I have for this game. Of course. Just now, just as sort of a, I want to point people towards, again, like I said, the music that I have for this. There is an entire album by ocremix.org that is called, what is the actual album called? It's called Threshold of a Dream. And that's what the album is called, by Overclocked Remix. You can go to ocremix.org and look for their albums. There's an entire album, and it is very... I'm going to close out our episode. For the live listeners, you're actually not going to hear the music because I'm going to put it in post so that you can actually... I can play out the whole song to finish this off. But it's an entire album, and it's really, really chill. It's really chill music. It's not the kind of music that I would normally play on the show, but it is very, because I like to have really upbeat music for you know, recording and stuff. But this is an exception because I think it's super cool. For those of you who like the game, I'm going to put that in and go over to ocremix.org and find that album. It's totally free. Everything on that website is free. Because of the amazing work that they do over there. So I definitely want to point people over there. It's an entire album. You can download it, and you know, it's just great. So absolutely check that out.
A couple of things just before we kind of transition out, Zach. Mm-hmm. For those of you that are playing the Retro Rewind with us, we are excited to announce that our Retro Rewind for the month of January. So this is you're playing it in the month of January, is Wario Land 2. And this was voted on and tallied by our Patreon supporters. They're the ones that submit the games, the suggestions for the games that we choose, and they vote. And so the winning vote was Wario Land 2. This is available on the 3DS virtual console for, I think it's $4.99. So check it out if you guys want to be playing. So we're going to do an extra episode next month in February focused to Wario Land 2, just like this. And if you are interested in how you have the ability to vote and to help decide what games that we're going to play in the future, make sure you go over to patreon.com/NintendoDads, where you can support our show and help us make amazing content like our amazing Patreon supporters who've helped make this fifth episode come to life. This is 100% because of the Patreon support of our amazing fans. So thank you guys very much.
Absolutely. And not only that, but we are getting closer actually to our next goal, which is our monthly call-in show, right, for patrons. Yeah. And so when we hit $75 a month, then we're going to end up doing another episode a month. What are we doing?
It's a Google Hangout.
People, yeah, it's going to be a Google Hangout. We can hang out with us. It's going to be great. And so I really am looking forward to, you know, being able to interact with the fans and with the patrons and stuff like that. And so if you're interested in helping us get to there, you know, we'd kind of said it doesn't necessarily, we don't need like people to spend a ton of money, but if everybody gave a little bit, with the number of listeners that we have, it would be incredible how fast we could get to some of these things that we want to do. If everybody just pitched in a little bit, it would be incredible.
And believe it or not, just even $1, it goes a long way for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a dollar is all that you need in order to get a fairly big chunk of what we do around here. So yeah. Absolutely, you know, anything that you can do is huge. And that's what makes this episode possible. And that's what's going to continue to bring all of our other cool stuff in the future possible as well. So. Right on. Well, thank you everybody, to the patrons for making this episode possible. Thank you, Justin and Jesse, for this episode.
Thank you, Zachary, for
taking a trip to Koholint Island. For some reason, I feel like it needs to be Irish. Oh, Koholint Island.
Oh, Koholint Island.
Yeah.
Wow, as Old Spice commercial. I like that.
Yeah. Right on. Well, until next time, everybody, from me, from Justin, and from Jesse, we will see you next time. Was that supposed to close with like our email address or something?
You know, it's probably not a bad idea.
We didn't do that, right? Should I just keep going?
Like through the music or just what our email address is? Well, I mean, I assume that if they're listening to the show, they could probably know that they could reach us on social media, of course, Nintendo Dads on all that social media stuff, or they could email us at nintendodads@gmail.com. But, I mean, because they're listening to our show, they probably know how to get a hold of us.
Yeah,
so
I would assume
I
so.
Think just cue the music.
Yeah, we probably know.
Yeah, just get
these. All right. See you next time.
That was smooth. Yeah.
Done deal. Okay. Good. I am going to...